The church fathers say, again, if you're seeing in a certain time, the Lord will bring back the remnant of Israel, and you look and see if it says the second time or all over or whatever. And in Isaiah chapters, I think 11 and 12, it actually says, Isaiah says, when the Lord brings them back the second time. That has to be 1948. They were created as a state after they left Egypt, went into the promised land, and basically created Israel. And then they were ousted by Nebuchadnezzar for the 70-year captivity, came back, of course, with Cyrus in 536, and then ousted by the Romans for 1816 years until 1948. But it talks about the fact that when the Lord brings them back a second time, there will be a peculiar religion amongst the people that surrounds Israel. Now, way back when, there used to be tons of different kinds of pagan religions. But again, this is the second time. So in 1948, the nations that surround Israel, which of course would be Turkey, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Persia, which is Iran, Egypt, all these places are Muslim. So we're talking about the Muslim religion. And it goes on to say that basically, tell me history if you can. Tell me prophecy if you can to see whether you are truly of God. And of course, you can look at the Palestinians now. They don't even think there was a Solomon's temple on the Temple Mount. Everybody knows their words, too well documented. Every historian, even atheistic ones, will tell you, yeah, Nebuchadnezzar destroyed a Jewish temple on that spot in 606 BC. You know, and this is when it happens. It's 606 when it started, and then 587 when it was finished. But everybody knows this, and it's within a year or two, except, of course, for Palestinians that don't know history. And there's no prophecy in the Quran, and it says that the work of that group, which is the Quran, amounts to nothing, and whosoever chooses that as a religion is an abomination to the God of Jacob. And it's just an amazing prophecy. Again, so Islam is obviously false. It obviously is a religion of hate and murder. But, you know, actually mentioned scripture like that. The other thing that was interesting, going a little step further in not just that, but in Psalm chapter 20, it talks about how at a certain point in history, the Lord will send help from the sanctuary to teach the people the scriptures and to reinstitute the sacrifices. Well, that's fine, and we read that and we totally miss over it. The word for help in Hebrew is Ezra. So if you transliterate that instead of translating it, you actually have the Lord will send Ezra to the people to teach them the scriptures and to reinstitute the temple sacrifices. And that's exactly what happened. We even have a book in the Bible called the Book of Help, or the Book of Ezra, Ezra and Nehemiah. And so you have to look real careful at those things. There is a word in Hebrew for violence, which is all through the Old Testament scriptures, and usually 99% of the time it always means just violence. But the word for violence in Hebrew is Hamas. And there are three specific scriptures that talk about how in the end times, slightly before the time when the day of the Lord would come, there would be Hamas, or a violence, that would raise itself up to be a seat of wickedness. The seat of this group would be in Kalna, Goth, and a few other places, which I thought was interesting. Goth, of course, is Gaza City. That's Gaza. Kalna is part of Iraq and these other places. So basically Iraq and Syria and Gaza. And we see Hezbollah and Hamas and these things going on now. So it's interesting how when you read it in Hebrew, not that it's necessary for salvation or anything, but it's important to have a good study Bible, word-for-word study Bible, where you miss little things like that. And nothing specific out of that other than the Lord will completely destroy that group and no one will even mourn for them. They and their children will be completely gone. At the end of one of the passages it says. So it's just interesting to see all these things and how this immense hatred for Israel comes up out of nowhere and, you know, attacks people. I had a friend that was in the southern Russia and was part of the Orthodox Russian Church, not really a Christian, but just kind of part of it. And one day he realized that all of a sudden people in the church and outside the church hated the Jews, and he didn't like them much either. He didn't think much about it. But then he thought, well, I don't like the guy. I don't want to do business with the guy, but I don't want to, like, take his kids and cut them up into pieces. So he started thinking about this and thinking, this is completely irrational. Where is this really weird hatred coming from? And that made him go to the scriptures, and he ended up becoming a Bible-believing Christian and immigrated to the States. So it's just interesting how some people wake up with this stuff going, you know, that's not right. Something else is going on here. And there's just many, many things we could talk about in that area, but the scriptures are really fantastic. There's probably a King James and a New King James Study Bible, just for the fact that those two translations have the full text. I'm not going to say that one's better than the other, but a lot of the text are missing places. For instance, if you go with one that's based on the Septuagint, in that Isaiah passage we talked about, it doesn't say the second time. That part's cut out. And I would have missed that whole thing about Islam and everything else had I not seen that second time in there. So it's important to get a good word-for-word study Bible, things that aren't cut out, that kind of a thing. Thompson Chain is good. There's a King James Study Bible, a New King James Study Bible, and then some others. There's Green produced a really wonderful interlinear, although if you use something like eSword, that's free, you can use on your computer, and it'll have almost all of that kind of stuff, and very easy to go back and double-check the wordings of those. Well, one of them in Micah talked about eight wars between Israel and Syria, starting from when they would come back the second time to when the Messiah would come back the second time. And of course, that passage also talks about the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem, you know, and will be given up because of the rulership in Israel at the time. And because of that, Israel would be destroyed. And so there's a lot of things like that. But specifically, there were passages talking about how they would take Ashkelon and Ashdod, which currently are the fifth and, I think, ninth largest cities in Israel. And so it's interesting how those were mentioned to be a desolation and then to be revived. Let's see, we talked about the Hebrew language being resolved. The actual date of when Israel was supposed to come back into the land was prophesied. And actually, also the date of when they would take the Temple Mount was supposed to end up on our calendar. It was June 7th, 1967. So it's amazing how some of these would happen. There's a prophecy about when the Antichrist would rule. It would be sometime after the time that Egypt no longer has kings. Egypt stopped having kings in 1953. So you can see that kind of a thing. Let's see here. One of the prophecies was that the Israeli shekel would come back into use. And so it's kind of neat when I go places and talk, I will, if I can remember, I'll bring my shekel with me and hold it up and say, this is a fulfillment right here of Bible prophecy I hold in my hand. It's just kind of neat to do that because it's tangible. One of the things was interesting, I thought, was in Ezekiel 38, it talks about how Russia or Gog and Magog would come down upon Israel. One of the things that it talks about, not under control, but willingly with Russia or with Magog, is several places, Persia being one, which is Iran, another which is Gomer. And you've probably, the word for, Gomer is the ancient land of Germany. German Jews are called Ashkenazic Jews, and that's one of Gomer's sons. So anyway, the language is there, but East and West Germany was split because of World War II. And I remember when I was in American English class in high school, and we were talking about World War II, and I raised my hand and said, well, the Germans started World War I, they started World War II, what do you think the chances are they'll start World War III? And he said, oh, no, never happened. The land is divided, there's a wall there, never, ever happened. And I'm thinking, you don't know much about prophecy. But what was interesting is that Gomer and all its bands unite and voluntarily go with Russia when they attack Israel. Well, that's not possible until the 1980s when the Berlin Wall fell. And so now East and West Germany are back together, and soon Austria will come with them in some form or another, and the bands of Gomer would be back together. So we get to see those kind of things. So I was in high school, and I actually watched on TV the Berlin Wall fall, but like normal, I'm like, man, I didn't know it was a prophecy. So it's nice to know about these things ahead of time so you can watch and see them. But there's prophecies about Israel restoring the cities, bringing back the original names. There would be farmers in the land that are non-Jewish farmers, you know, Palestinians. Tourists would actually fly in and support Israel. It actually says they fly in like doves. And, wow. You know, people look at that kind of thing and think it's, you know, poetry or something. Not really. You can't fly into any country around Israel and then go from that country drive into Israel. They don't allow it. They don't say it's real, that it doesn't exist. They don't have it on any of their maps, which, again, is another prophecy. That mentions that five cities would stay desolate. Scriptures talks about Ekron, Capernaum, and several others. And all of those cities have been pretty much reconstructed except for those five cities, which are still basically ruins and a tourist attraction. So there's a lot of things like that. Let's see here. One of the interesting things, back in 2004, the Sanhedrin was reestablished. And I think that's a fulfillment of prophecy, or partially, because remember when Jesus said, talking to the Jews in Israel at the time of the tribulation, when you're in Israel, and you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, he says, run, don't go back to your home to get your belongings, just get out. If you go back home to get your belongings, you're not going to make it, because an intense persecution is going to start. And he says, pray that it not be on the Sabbath, or on in the winter time, you know, or this kind of thing. Well, why pray it's not on a Sabbath? Because it doesn't make any difference. I can just hop in a taxi and get out of town. Well, if the old laws are put back, you wouldn't be able to hop in a taxi on the Sabbath day and get out of town. So that tells me the laws will come back, and so I'm waiting to see the Sanhedrin. And in 2004, the Sanhedrin was reestablished under the auspices of the way Maimonides had disbanded and said that it would have to be put back. So they disbanded in the 400s, reestablished in 2004, and at first they were kind of the laughingstock of everybody, 70 old guys that think they can tell people what to do. And everybody just kind of made fun of them. But very quickly, an awful lot of Jews and non-Jews started paying strict attention to them because of what they really are. I mean, and now they're not really a power in Israel, but they are respected. So it's gaining, and it's kind of interesting to see that beginning to happen. There's a prophecy that talks about Gaza being forsaken, you know, and we saw that happen back in 2005. And the problems that happened along with it. Iran and Russia and Turkey are supposed to form this military alliance along with Germany. So some of those things have happened. And so it's just interesting just to see some of those. But there's a whole lot of other things that are, you know, in the works or partially fulfilled. But just even a few of those. I mean, again, the United States can't make all that happen. Things are gaining ground as we talk about. One interesting thing happened recently, for the first time in about 2,000 years since the temple was destroyed, the Temple Institute in Jerusalem did a practice Passover, not on the Temple Mount, but under the Temple Mount, and then one in the Golan Heights, where they actually went through the entire ritual with proper Kohens and did a Passover sacrifice, roasted the lamb and ate it, and did the whole thing. So that's the first time in 2,000 years. So things are beginning to happen. They used to talk about how about 30% of the Israelis wanted to rebuild a temple, maybe as a museum, and start studying Torah and stuff like that. And now the stats show about 60%. And there's a lot of people saying, we want our temple back. The Knesset the other day, one particular Knesset member went to the Temple Mount, couldn't pray because of the other stuff, went to the Knesset, said, this is ridiculous. That's ours, not anybody else's. We need to pass a law saying we have sovereignty. Christians, Jews, and Muslims, anybody that wants to pray should be able to go pray. And this is absolutely ridiculous. And so they did that, and other things are going on there. But they said that it used to be one or two, maybe three old guys with a lamb would try to go up to the Temple Mount every year you know, sometime during the year and sacrifice. The police would always stop them. Now it's like one or two every month or every week. Somebody's trying to do something like that. So you can just see the people in general are saying, this is our land. It's our heritage. And of course, one of the prophecies is that they will rebuild the temple. And so that's not anytime soon necessarily, but it's coming.